All right, so this is going to be part two of cancer stuff. We did a podcast a while back where we watched The Beautiful Truth. And, of course, for, I don't know, probably about 20 different podcasts, cancers come up. But today we're going to visit with a cancer survivor, somebody who got hit with the cancer stuff and then called me. And of course she's done a bunch of her own stuff without me, but now because she drugged me into it, I've made her promise to give me a podcast out of it. So I think a lot of people might be a little shocked at who our celebrity is that now is cancer free. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Paul. Yes, you get to have this story because you showed me the movie The Beautiful Truth.
So that was the day after we watched. We did a podcast review of The Beautiful Truth, and we did that the day after you called me, which was the day that you found out. So you called me like moments after hearing back about the biopsy.
No, actually that probably a week after I heard about the biopsy. I was pretty dysfunctional for a couple of days after I found out about the biopsy.
Okay. Well, I thought that it was, you just heard it because you told me. I just found out. And you were in your car, and I had come to this idea that you were driving home from the hospital, having just been told. That was what I had thought. But I, you know, I'm open to the idea of there being many interpretations of what was going on that day.
That's a nice story, but they don't tell you. That's one of the things actually that has been most eye-opening to me. I had not spent much time with the modern American medical system. I hadn't spent any time with the modern American medical system until this little episode, and so I didn't really know how it worked. And now I have a wonderful juxtaposition with the medical system, the alternative medical system that helped me in this healing process. And I have some unsettledness about our modern medical system as a result. So they won't tell you. When you go to get results, when you go to have a procedure done, like a mammogram, or in my case, a biopsy, because of course I did that, you always have to have some soil tests done, right? So of course I did that. They won't tell you. You have to hear the results days later from a phone call with your primary healthcare provider, because the folks who actually do the biopsy tell your primary care provider first, and then that person will call you and listen to you react, I guess, is the reason. So we don't have this a direct communication within the system. It's really disconcerting, I can tell you, having to wait for days and days after you've done the biopsy to find out what the results are.
Yeah, all right, so that's frustrating on so many different levels, and we can start to think about the whys and whatnot, but it seems like there's got to be like a scam in there somehow, and I don't know what it is. But the key is, you called me. Your concerns were at the top of your list. You were concerned about death, and so we talked about that. But basically it's a type of cancer that's not a spreading cancer. It's breast cancer. And so I believe that I mitigated that one, that no, we're not talking about, like death really isn't on the table.
And actually, once I got the diagnosis, just like what I've always done in agriculture with this new wonderful gift that has been given to me to see myself and yet another system, the medical system, the healing system, in a direct way, I've been walking the edge between modern and conventional and alternative and way over the edge healing, as I have with agriculture. And I'm really glad now that I did the diagnosis, because a number of people who've come into my world that have done alternative healing aren't counted by the medical world because they never had a true diagnosis. So if it wasn't diagnosed as cancer and it went away, well, you know,
it might never have been cancer.
So I have a true, by golly, diagnosis. I came back to Montana to take care of my parents, and my mother had a health episode, and I took her to the doctor, and the next day, actually to the emergency room, and the next day took her to our naturopath, or the one my parents have been going to for years and years, Dr. Tim Binder in Hamilton, and she was treated for her issue, and Tim was looking so tired. I said, here, let me do some shiatsu on you. You look exhausted. And he said, thank you very much. Now, what can I do for you? And I said, well, you know, I'm sure it's nothing, but I've got this little lump I've had for the last couple of months, and I want you to look at it and tell me what you think. And he did his muscle testing and said, it's cancer. And you need to come back tomorrow, and we will figure out what to do. So I did, and he did more muscle testing, and he gave me a homeopathic remedy. And without any of the tests that I ultimately did with the medical world, he gave me a wonderful product called Indoplex, or DIM. It's been developed by UC Berkeley, researchers at UC Berkeley, and basically what it is a concentration of the phytochemicals in cruciferous vegetables, in broccoli and cabbage, and it's 2 pounds of broccoli in one pill, for example. And what that does is that it metabolizes estrogen, one of the hormones that plays havoc with women in midlife. And Tim didn't have any diagnosis yet. It took me several weeks before I had the mammogram, which I did go to first, and then the biopsy, where they take out a little bit of the tissue of this very small, at the time it was only kidney bean size, lump, and they send it off to the lab, and they look for all kinds of indicators. And a lot of both breast and prostate cancers are hormone dependent, meaning that if you block certain hormones in the body, the cancer doesn't grow. And mine is estrogen dependent. So intriguingly enough, my naturopath had already given me what I needed 2 weeks before the biopsy told me that I needed it. And of course, the modern medical world has some pharmaceutical alternatives for this natural product, and they all have lovely side effects, but they do block the estrogen.
And it costs some serious dough.
Yes, indeed. There is expense involved, too. You bet.
So now, when you first called me, you were scheduled for surgery, and it's like, and chemo was definitely part of the
package. Chemo.
Never chemo.
It was just a lump. One of the other things that they suggested, and it was another part of the medical system that was unsettling to me. You have your primary care health provider, your doctor. You have a surgeon. You have, if you're doing radiation, you have a radiologist, and you have an oncologist. So I, you know, was never going to consider doing radiation. That was what they suggest. Anybody that saw my biopsy report in the modern medical world suggested a very quick lumpectomy and some radiation, and then I had, you know, wonderful chances of recovery and never coming back. So I was never going to do radiation. I never bothered to look up an oncologist or a radiation person. Actually, I did run into a very wonderful oncologist who used to buy red peppers from me in Missoula at at the Good Food Store in Missoula, and I asked him his opinion. And he said, absolutely, Helen, you know, with your determination, you should do whatever you think you need to do, and with your health, it will work out. So I felt pretty confident I didn't need to do that. But I did go make an appointment with the surgeon, who was very kind, very energetic, very competent, reminded me a lot of myself when I was 35 and not as... when I was very sure of myself, we'll just put it that way, and didn't realize how much complexity there is out there in the universe and the biological world. And so I got that option, and I did schedule myself for a lumpectomy if it came to that, but I scheduled it way in the future so that I could look into some other alternatives.
So when I talked to you, I think it was scheduled a month into the future.
Right. At that point, the medical world had made me feel
that... You were scared.
Yes, that a month into the future was geologic time scale, that it was a long way away, and that
they were thinking it was ridiculous that you would wait, you know.
They really did, yes. They thought it was crazy, and they treated these cancer cells like alien space invaders that we don't understand and we are entirely afraid of, and we just have to get them out, and kill them. And I do need to say that for a week to 2 week period, I found myself in the same paradigm I had been in my early 20s when we felt that way about agriculture, that basically when you looked at a food production system, that insects and diseases and weeds were all invaders and they needed to be killed. And that's what brought me to my senses. I said, wait a minute. I've been doing this in the agricultural world for 30 years now, and we don't need to look at these other things as invaders. We look at them as part of the system that we have to understand all the interrelationships with. And gosh, son of a gun, I bet my body's the same way. And once I finally got there, then I realized, oh, I don't have to be afraid, and I don't have to be frightened, and there are ways to look at this, and I will grow as I have grown over the last 30 years as I've delved into alternative agriculture systems and learning to hear the voices and speak the languages of all the organisms involved in all the interrelationships. So that's when cancer became a gift, and I started learning things and stopped being so afraid. It was still another couple of months before I actually got the wonderful lesson of not allowing myself to have that fear that makes us do everything from our food system to our energy system to our medical system. But that was the start.
So I think what you just said is something like, rather than having the mindset of like, okay, cancer is bad and I'm going to go get a machine gun, a machete, and a couple of time bombs, and I'm going to so fuck up at shit. I'm going to kill it, stab it, rip its head off, and make it die, and get the fuck out of me. So rather than that, it's like, well, wait a minute. This is part of the system. This is part of how things work. And so rather than saying, I'm going to just kill it, I'm going to say, well, why is it here? Why did it show up? I mean, I'm super organic, way beyond organic. How did this even come in my door? Well, you know, it seems like I should be immune to this stuff. And the word immune is probably the key word there.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. And that was what was lovely about the movie that you and I watched. I was coming around to, okay, let's start to look at this as a system. Let's take a systems approach to this. And in the movie that we watched, The Beautiful Truth, they start to get at that. They talk about cancer as basically being a result of toxins and deficiencies. And so I was already doing a couple of these things, but I started looking at the toxins in my life and later the deficiencies in my life. And that has led to a wonderful understanding of both toxins and deficiencies, and made me even rethink my whole agriculture, which I kind of thought I was doing for the last 30 years anyway. But yeah.
You changing the way you do ag?
Wow.
Okay, so like, what are you changing in your ag practices based upon having been through the cancer thing?
Well, I, as you know, I have been moving for the last 20 years, at least on my own place, more in the what less can I do as a human and what more can I learn from emulating natural systems. What more can I learn from the way a natural system does it, and how can I not disturb the system? And so so I have, over the years, done less and less, which is kind of nice in some ways. It gives me more time to do other things. And how can I help the system sponsor its own pest management, its own fertility? So I was developing quite a closed system. And it turned out to be kind of a living laboratory, because I ate for 20 years only the vegetables and fruits that I grew. I did get grains and beans from elsewhere, and did cheat on other things like organic corn chips from elsewhere. But in terms of fruits and vegetables, the bulk of my diet came from my land. And as I started to close the system more and more, so that I grew my own fertilizer in place and didn't add anything, it became a closed capsule. And in my early 20s, I was real interested in the Albrecht cation balancing and mineral balancing. And I, you know, whenever I did soil tests, I certainly paid attention to that. And when people brought me their soil tests, I always paid attention to that as part of what the information to help them was. But I did not focus on mineral balancing. And through this little gift of being not as 100% healthy as I thought I was, I've met two really interesting people who have both talked to me about mineral balancing. One is my wonderful friend in North Carolina, Johnny Gregory, who has a farm and has been in the health field for many years. And he said, look at enzymes and minerals for your health and see what might be missing. And so I've really, part of my cancer treatment was to mineralize up, so to speak. And then recently, as part of my project to look at long-term eco-oriented farms that have been doing organic commercial production for 20 years or more and have 20 years or more of records that I can look at, I visited Carl Rosado's place in Oroville, California, and he's really into mineral balancing. You can go to you can Google his farm, Woodleaf Farm, and he's got a little write-up on mineral balancing and how he does it. And I have to tell you, his farm is amazing. He is one of the few organic fruit producers I know that sprays virtually nothing. He hasn't sprayed almost anything in years and years.
And when you say spray, you mean organic?
Certified organic sprays, but fruit producers particularly use a lot of certified organic sprays, because there are a lot of organisms that really like fruit. and hence they go for it.
We're going to be stopping by Carl's place as part of the big tour, but
I know
you don't have a lot of time. I want to make sure we cover all the cancer stuff.
So otherwise,
we'll go off on 87 different topics about agriculture.
What I would do now is think more about mineral balancing. I'm still really loath, and this will take us just for a few seconds to a different topic. I'm really loath to take minerals from somewhere else and put it on land that I'm working. I know where limestone comes from now. I know what an environmental disaster limestone quarries are. So I hate, for example, the idea of adding limestone to a place, rock phosphate, many of those things. So what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, and hopefully it will be not too short at this point because I really have a lot to learn, is how to balance these minerals without having to mine them from the earth and disrupt someone else's place so that my soil can be better. So that's what I would do differently. You asked that question.
Have you seen my Comfrey video?
And of course, that's what I was doing. I mean, I was raising lots of different biodiversity of plants on my place, and I thought that was enough. And maybe it was. I mean, I don't know. Carl suggested I do blood work and hair analysis to see where I am, and I'm going to go back to the soil tests on my land. So maybe it was all working, but it's raised a question for me.
See, now that kind of makes me think about when it comes to cancer, there's a couple of important things. One is that we all have cancer all the time, everybody. Mm-hmm. And when we say somebody has cancer, I think it's a rather poor way of being able to say that the cancer junk in their life is now exceeded the ability for their immune system to beat it back.
Yeah.
And so there should be a better way of phrasing it so it seems less confusing. And so I think that a big part of it is that, you know, every day, everybody, no matter where you are taking a carcinogen bath, whatever you're doing throughout the day, anywhere. I don't think there's any part of the planet that is not subjected to a carcinogenic bath. If nothing else, we've got air pollution, we've got mercury in the atmosphere, we've got all kinds of stuff that's just spread out all over everything. So it's kind of like, how can you go from having 100 units of bath to 2 units of bath is part of it. But then the thing is, I think your immune system is going to naturally degrade as you get older. And then it's kind of like, and then when you get to this point that it's like, uh-oh, the two paths cross. The bath got high enough, or the bath was high enough, while at the same time the immune system was low enough, it got in, and it got out of whack. And so then it's kind of like, so it sounds like what you're doing is you've taken a two-pronged approach. One is to reduce the size of the bath, of the carcinogenic bath, and the other is to bolster your immune system. You've also worked at reducing your hormone levels as far as the hormones that were, you know, behind part of what's behind the problem. So I just wanted to express that, and I'm not sure if we mentioned in a previous podcast that this is how cancer works. And I'm also not sure if the regular medical industry agrees that that's how cancer works.
They certainly don't, as a matter of fact. And still there are, I think that's why we look at cancer as space aliens, because we don't understand the young and very earnest, very bright surgeon said to me, so we know that these cells start acting abnormally, and we don't know why, but they suddenly become cancer cells and they start growing. So we don't know. So we have a lot of fields of research, genetic fields. They're looking at cancer as possibly a disease like autoimmune diseases that are have to do with, I can't think of the word right now, swelling and what is the word I'm looking for?
Right, I don't know. My mind's wandering off in things like there's things you could have been exposed to as a kid that could lead to you having cancer as an adult. Like even you know, not just when you're 20 as an adult, but when you're 50 as an adult.
And a lot of people are looking at that. I think the medical world is doing more and more research on non-genetic things, but they're also still looking at genetic things. They don't talk about diet at all. They talked about what would make me more susceptible. And one good thing for me is that I was in really good health and that I didn't have excess weight. Apparently, there's a direct correlation between excess weight and breast cancer. So that's one they've looked at, but they still, surprisingly enough, when I went on the American Cancer Society website, they don't stress dietary changes very much at all, except alcohol. There does seem to be a correlation between alcohol consumption and breast cancer.
Well, I think the big thing is that I wonder if the American Cancer Association is if their mission is like, how do we get our contributors to make more money? And a big part of the money is going to be in like the surgery, the hospital stay, the mammograms, the chemo, the all these different you know, and it's like, wow, you know, we can get like $150,000 from somebody, you know, if they come in here with cancer, and that's whether they live or die. You know, and so ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. So now I'm going to rant a little bit on the things that make me angry, especially with breast cancer. And because I kind of think to myself, like, okay, so here's what we've got. We've got companies that put carcinogens into things, and I think I was reading that it was a pesticide company that actually founded the breast cancer thing, the Pink Ribbon outfit. and so basically what they did was is they were also, as part of their stuff that they did, they started selling the stuff that would be things that might help to control cancer. But then their stuff was so expensive that people were not able to afford it. So they founded this Pink Ribbon thing to make it so that they could get big gobs of money given to them by others, which would then, so all they needed, they got so much money in that Pink Ribbon thing. They got so much money, and they weren't able to get their hands on all of it, that they really, really needed more people, more women, to get breast cancer. I mean, how twisted is that? So then we get into this whole space of like rape. Let's talk about rape for a minute. I mean, I wonder which is worse, rape or having somebody give you breast cancer, then and they charge you for it, by the way, and then they're going to charge you to detect it. They're going to charge you to put you through their hell, and then you still might die of it. So they're going to cut you open. This is their plan. Plan A. Cut you open, knives. Everybody gets to look at your boobs, and we're gonna hack at them with knives, hack out little bits, and then we're going to tell you that it's your fault for having not gone and gotten it detected earlier, or it's your fault for being fat, it's your fault for having lived a life that brought you breast cancer. So it's like we've got a PR campaign to tell you it's your fault. We're going to poison you. We're then going to hack you up. And we're going to then dump all kinds of radiation and chemicals on you, and we expect you to thank us for it. So I'm sorry. It just strikes me as like worse than rape. You know, on the scale of awfulness, it just seems to me like this thing is worse than rape. But now I could be wrong about that.
Oh well, actually, I have to say that some of what you said in a modified form, I definitely experienced. And again, the gift of this for me has been to see the way through to a better method. First, I'll tell you what I did experience. Indeed, I had very much simplified my life so that I was living off the grid, eating very well, and I had removed myself enough from the health system so that I didn't have health insurance. So when I went in to get a mammogram and paid for it myself, they were shocked. And I could have just done the alternative route and not gone for all of this other approach, but I guess being a person who quantifies, I wanted to have the analysis techniques that were out there. So when I decided to do a biopsy, they were very kind to me, and they said, since you don't have health insurance, there is a program set up to help with detection of breast and cervical cancer. And they couldn't have been more kind. And so it was extremely expensive. I was shocked at the cost of a biopsy. Again, I'm for the long term, what I know now, I'm really glad I did it. On the other hand, I felt all of those things that you're talking about on the way home from the biopsy, driving to my little 100-year-old cabin with solar electricity. There was a big billboard that said, cancer doesn't drag its feet. And it showed a man in his hospital bed and his distraught wife, and it was an advertisement for these tests that will then, it is presumed, keep you safe from cancer. And of course, what I realize now is that they won't keep you safe from cancer. Changing your lifestyle and looking at all of the toxins and the deficiencies and the way we live our lives outside of a biological system, so to speak, is what will save us from cancer. So that's all the part that, you know, I kind of agree with you on, although I maybe wouldn't go quite as far.
Yeah, wouldn't be as angry, maybe?
Yeah, I guess I'm not angry.
I'm a bitter person. That's why I have to eat pie. Otherwise,
I see. Well, watch the sugar. Sugar's really bad for cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so what I did is I went to a clinic in Mexico, which was a wonderful experience of community medicine in Tijuana, called the Biomedical Center. And the Biomedical Center doesn't have any appointments. You basically show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and everybody signs in and gets a little post-it note with their name and their case number on it. And you walk down the hallway, anybody who shows up, you all go together. The day I was there, there were 15. And then you all get a little specimen cup, and you all go in and fill your specimen cup up. There are two restrooms, and then everybody puts their little specimen on top of their post-it note on a tray. It would probably be illegal in this country to do that, to have, God forbid, specimens commingling on the same tray. And then you're sent to four, you know, half little dressing rooms, like, you know, where you dress at a local pool to change into your bathing suit. And they give you these very clean but ill-fitting hospital gowns. The man behind me that was 6'4" really should have had the one that I had that was voluminous and came down, you know, almost to my ankles, and the one that he had was above his knees, and he was wearing black cowboy boots with his mini skirt hospital gown. And then we went about the whole morning, you know, in our hospital gowns and underwear, and got very intimate, and we had blood work together, and they would, of course, just look at basic health, so your heart rate and your blood pressure, and then they sent you down to this sort of ancient room with X-ray equipment, but sort of old X-ray equipment, and everything was very clean, but clearly, you know, nothing was new. And the guy was in a white lab coat, and later on, I noticed he was the guy that swept the floor. And he did not just an X-ray of my breast, where the problem was, but a whole X-ray of my internal organs. They wanted to see what I look like, what was going on with me, was I healthy, you know, was my pancreas full of stuff, was my colon full of junk. And then I had my first appointment with my doctor. Oh, actually, first we all came back after doing all of our little test things, and we sat in our hospital gowns and our underwear in the big waiting room, and everybody told their stories. So you had this lovely community health by accident, because we weren't kept solitary and sterile and in our safe little rooms where nobody knew what was going on with our situation unless we wanted to tell them. We were all forced together, and we had this camaraderie. And so instead of having to have these groups that the breast cancer folks do, very kindly, I might add, they bring us all together, and then we talk about our stories. Just by doing it cheaply like this, you can imagine how much cheaper it is to do it the way they did in Mexico with all of us just doing that. And we all told our stories, and they were very hopeful stories. There were 5 of the 15 people that had breast cancer and were cured the day I was there. One woman was back after 3 months, and her lump had already gotten smaller. Another woman had been cured 30 years previously and just came back every year for an annual checkup. Because it was so cheap in Mexico, it was $50 for an annual checkup.
Wow.
Yeah. So we went to the doctor. I had the most complete physical I've ever had. 5 or 6 pages of history. He sat at his own little desk, typed it in on his own little computer, and his examining room was right there with his desk, which was quite messy. And while he was doing my exam, the phone rang. He answered it himself, and I know enough Spanish to know that he was talking to one of his regular patients who had a toothache. And again, all of that, none of that would have happened, and we were all intermingled with one another. So anyway, after that, we all went to lunch, and the doctors got together. They have a very healthy cafeteria there, by the way, where you eat food with all organic food with everything that's on the diet for this particular clinic. And the doctors get together and talk about the results of everyone that they've seen, and they talk about what the options are for everyone. So they have this group approach. And then the afternoon we go back and we talk about what we might do and what our options are, and we get what they, one of the main things that this particular clinic does is the Hoxie treatment, H-O-X-E-Y, that was actually developed by a veterinarian in the early part of the last century by an American, and it's outlawed in this country because some of the herbs in it have caused distress to children. So anyway, the Hoxie treatment is given to almost all the patients that come in, as well as many other things. And the day I was there, everybody had really good news, except one woman from British Columbia who had uterine cancer, and they said her cancer had gone far enough that she needed to do surgery, but she could do all the other things. With me, they told me I was so healthy, I had my body looked really good, I looked like I have a really healthy immune system, I didn't need to come back for 6 months. They gave me 6 months of the Hoxie treatment. They gave me U needles, which ironically turned out to be from Montana. So I brought them back from Mexico to Montana to take, and they gave me another estrogen metabolizer. This one was Chinese herbs. And interferon, which is a compound, a natural compound to boost the immune system. So off I went for 1/6 the price of my biopsy in America.
And that included a trip to Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah. And the stuff that's outlawed, the side effects. I mean, I know that the conventional technique would have side effects, like all your hair falls out and you'll have scars and there's, you know, that chance of death. Some of the flesh will be cut from you. Some women even lose an entire breast. And the nausea, I've heard about nausea. What were the side effects from this?
Well, what was interesting, when I started taking the herbal treatment, I broke out. Well, who knows? I was taking the herbal treatment and I was doing the estrogen metabolizers that remove estrogen from my body. So I was on a kind of a hormonal swing, but my skin broke out like I was a 16-year-old, and there were times when I felt a little tired.
So hormonal swing, I understand that might be a euphemism for being bitchy.
No, actually, I felt really good. I didn't feel that way,
okay.
But my skin broke out. I had these, you know, these
pimples.
Oh my goodness, more like welts.
Okay, you know? So you didn't get a boob lopped off.
I didn't, and
you didn't. Your hair didn't fall out.
No, it's all still there.
But pimples.
I got pimples, and I was tired. For me, I kept at what most people considered to be a normal schedule, but for me, I was a little tired.
So now I understand tired is another part of the side effects on the other side. You know, when you get the chemo and whatnot, tired. But it sounds like, boy, you're right. I can see why it's outlawed. $50, and you could get pimples, and maybe so tired that while you're working, you might notice, boy, I don't feel like I have the energy that I did before. That sounds like somebody is getting not as much money.
I lost a little bit of weight too. I lost a little bit of weight, but that.
Well, when you have a mastectomy, you lose weight through that too.
You do, yeah. And I didn't lose it. In fact, actually. I seem to have improved my muscle tone. So I actually, gosh, I don't know how to say this, but I got better physically too. From
you look younger than when, you know, because it seems like about a year ago. Yeah, you look younger.
And I've had comments from people that, you know, that my muscle tone is as good as, you know, when I was a triathlete 8 or 9 years ago.
Okay. All right. So I want to pop through some of the notes that I have written down here. You ended up postponing the surgery and whatnot several times.
And now I've just sort of put, I just, there's no more postponement. I basically have decided not to do it. My regular doctor, whom I finally went to, thinks that maybe I should keep it open as an option, but there's virtually nothing left to take out. So if it continues along like this, there'll probably not be any surgery.
So then whenever I talked to you about your lump, I had named your lump Lumpy, and so we talked about Lumpy every couple of weeks.
So special, Paul.
How's Lumpy doing today? And then for a while, he started off as a little bigger than a kidney bean,
mm-hmm.
then a little smaller than a kidney bean,
mm-hmm.
and then about the size of a pea.
Mm-hmm.
Then Lumpy turned into a squishy pea,
mm-hmm.
whereas Lumpy had always been really hard before.
Yes.
And then Lumpy is pretty much undetectable.
Lumpy's pretty hard to find at this point. You can. My regular doctor, I finally went to her, and I didn't tell her. I gave her the general place, and she could find Lumpy, but we'll just put it this way. If I were trying, I'm the one that found this lump. You know, I didn't find it with a mammogram, da-da-da-da-da. But if I were looking myself now, I probably wouldn't notice.
So then, when you first came over to watch The Beautiful Truth, then, it seems like I grilled you incessantly about everything in your life. We did find a few things, not very many, but a couple of things. But real quick, The Beautiful Truth, do you believe that it seems like before you watched it, you were leaning towards, like, it seems like you're feeling like you're going to go with the surgery, but you really wanted to not, but you couldn't think of what would be better. And then you watch The Beautiful Truth. I'm not sure if it, my impression was, is that it changed your position completely.
Well, what really changed my position was going down to Mexico and meeting the doctor there that is one of the most spiritual beings I've ever met, a truly humble person. And his name is Dr. Gutierrez. And so that put me on course. What was really important about The Beautiful Truth is that it helped me realize the whole systems approach, which I was wanting to lean towards, but I had been talking only to the modern American medical world mostly at that point. And I'd gone online and I'd looked at the website for the American Cancer Society and for Sloan Kettering. And so what the beautiful truth told me was, wow, it is just like what you have known for 30 years with agricultural systems. Follow the interrelationships and follow the links. And so I found that despite the fact that I'd been eating my organic food for 20 years, that there were a couple places that I had really gone wrong. And one of them was that I was taking something every day for the last 5 years, or well, certainly not now, but...
One of those vitamin drink packet things.
Yeah, Emergency, that had aspartic acid in it, which is aspartame. And as I look, there is a very unpleasant association of aspartame and cancer growth. So I was taking that every day and had been for 5 years until I quit. So that was something. And then even in my good organic diet with this estrogen-dependent cancer, there were a couple of things that I was doing badly. And that was that, you know, there's a lot of... There's a lot of evidence both ways on soy. Number one, I think it has to be organic because we don't know anything about GMO soy. But soy does have an estrogen effect. And so if indeed you are in a stage where you have an estrogen-dependent cancer, you just shouldn't probably be taking soy. So I eliminated soy from my diet. I didn't really eat much sugar, but I had been eating some honey, and I totally eliminated that. Another thing that I had really been doing that I had heard about, but I hadn't seen any real evidence or enough evidence, and that was overheated oils, cooking with oils. And so I basically stopped cooking with oils and only cook with water now. And if I do use oils, I'll use them cold in salad dressing. But no overheated oils, reduced all plastics, you know, no plastic bottles. I just don't buy much that would have a plastic bottle. Try to use glass if I do.
You might have had some plastic stuff running in your house.
Very little, but but I'm real careful now,
right,
about that. So no sugars. And then, of course, the beautiful truth is associated with the Gerson Clinic also in Tijuana, Mexico. And what they do at the Gerson Clinic is put you on a vegan diet and have lots of green juices. Well, I was already a vegan, and so what I did was start juicing more. So, and I have to tell you, that felt really good. I don't know if it's a placebo effect or not, but from the very first time I made a green juice, I just felt energized. So maybe it's the enzymes that Johnny talks about, or it just is some essence. But the green juicing is something I do every day, and as I told you already, my diet consists mainly of fruits and vegetables now.
I think when it comes to curing cancer, we've got a few threads that are permeates about it, and it seems like there's probably 100 different recipes on 100 different diets, but they all seem to universally eliminate sugar. So, and the one we see the most on permeates is paleo, so that's where people tend to eat a lot more fat. They pretty much eliminate grain, but it's It's and then of course any kind of manufactured food, any kind of but I think that's, and then there's kind of a funny thing where it's like I think we need a new word for vegan, because the people who are drinking Diet Coke and eating Oreos believe that that's vegan, and it's like so we need, I think it would be great to come up with a something that's a better word. Good luck with that, by the way, or at least get the Diet Coke people out of the vegan word. Go get your own word. Something like that, and a lot of raw, a lot of trying to get more of your foods to be less prepared, less cooked, and yeah, there's also a lot there about overheating oils, especially certain oils just do not heat well, and so then try to make sure any cooking that you do is with something that has a very high smoke point, and then for the stuff that has a very low smoke point, then yeah, eating it only raw. These are pretty common things that go over all the different kinds of diets that go with them. Some people advocate, I've seen a lot of stuff about advocating an alkaline diet. I don't know if you did anything with that, but that seems to fit in the vegan world too. I think there's a lot of people out there that would say that you cannot beat cancer with a vegan diet, but I don't think that's true, and you're living proof of that.
I wanted to say something about the alkaline diet, because that's part of the diet that they gave me at the biomedical center, too, to not minimize the effect of the herbs. I'm working on more of an alkaline diet, and actually that's the hardest part for me. I can't have tomatoes, which is, as you know, very hard for me.
Yeah, you are the tomato queen.
And no vinegar, and no pickles, no fermented products of any kind, and that's mainly so that the herbs aren't deactivated in the Hoxie treatment. But it also has to do a bit with the sense of having an alkaline.
But you eat lots of figs.
Yeah, and I did. I was down in Northern California where on Woodley Farm where Carl grows figs, and so I ate figs, and that was wonderful. Anyway, I did want to say about the sugar that when you go through the science and look at the studies that have been done, there seems to be some really good scientific evidence associating sugar and cancer cell growth. So that kind of to me is a no-brainer.
Yeah, sugar is like Purina cancer chow.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that one's pretty universal. So you came to me. It seems like on the very first day that you were here, we went through everything that you're eating, got rid of a lot of things, had you change a lot of your life, and not too terribly far from what you're already doing, but there were weird things. And one of the ones is that, and it's like, I should not ever have to say this to a woman, ever, 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 except that we're good enough friends, I could tell you have to lose the bra.
Yeah, and I don't know if I, how much I believe in that or not. Certainly the scientific world doesn't believe that. However, to me, it's not that big a deal either way. And so, so that's another thing that I am doing. And, I'm so healthy with this vegan diet now, and I've got such good muscle tone that it sort of is a non-issue.
So are you saying that
you probably don't want to go any farther?
I really don't want to go into this one a lot. Yeah. So bra needs went away. Is that what I think? That's what you just said.
It's kind of, and at 53 to say that I've got good muscle tone, I think is a good indication that the vegan diet is healthy for me.
That's working,
Mr. Wheaton.
So now. I guess, so the thing with the bra is that it's an irritant, and that it's also typically made from synthetic materials. And so you've got like your petroleum product rubbing right on your skin. And on top of that, a lot of times it's also not necessarily scratching, but pinching. And I mean, I think cancer, a lot of cancers come from irritants, like where you've had some sort of irritant on your skin.
My dear, if irritants caused cancer entirely, I wouldn't be here today with you.
because I'm an irritant? Are you saying that I caused your cancer?
I think that we should move on to a topic with
I need you
more
to say
science.
No.
I think we should move on to a topic with more scientific merit.
I think we're about through the list here. I do think that a lot of skin cancers have some sort of, I mean, they require an irritant of some type.
And, you know, that's funny that you would say skin cancer because that's what I deserve, you know, so to speak, if you're on that deserving thing with cancer. Or not, because, you know, I'm always ridiculously brown because I'm out in the sun all the time and I don't, you know, I don't buy all of the protecting your skin the way so many do. And in fact, I have funny stories on that as well. One of the reasons I'm home in Montana is my father got Parkinson's disease. And what they're finding now is what may be at the basis of Parkinson's is that we've been telling people to stay out of the sun you know, that has caused a lack of vitamin D, and if they give people vitamin D, they don't have Parkinson's. And I kept looking more and more, and vitamin D is also very important for skin cancer. So if you get vitamin D, you're not as susceptible to skin cancer. And then I found a wonderful study, you know, these studies are sometimes buried away, where they compared vitamin D from sunlight to vitamin D from supplements, and the vitamin D from sun is far more effective than the vitamin D against supplements against skin cancer.
I think it's funny how marketing has gotten people to the point where they'll buy sun pucky, which causes cancer, just as well. It leads to cancer as well as sun, but it's like a skin.
I don't know what sun pucky is.
So sunscreen, like SPF gazillion or whatever.
Yeah.
The you put toxic gick on your skin and you stink. That you know causes it just as much. But then I really think the thing is that if you're getting skin cancer, that basically you've been in this carcinogenic bath. And I mean, how is it that we've gotten to the point where it's like people are hiding from the sun because they're afraid of skin cancer? And it's like these people should be out in the sun, and their being out in the sun will help to prevent skin cancer. And on top of that, it's like when they're out there and if they get the skin cancer, it's not the sun's fault. the sun's been around a long time.
The one caveat I do want to say about all of this is that just like plants, just like agroecosystems, just like human bodies, there's a lot more diversity than we give it all credit for. And so that what's worked for me might be not what works for someone else. I think some of the principles make sense in terms of what deficiencies are there, what toxins are there, that you need to look at your body as a system and not as things that are good and things that are bad and things that need to be killed. But these different specific details that work for individuals, I mean, some people might have a skin that indeed being as much in the sun as I am would cause skin cancer. So I think we want to be cautious that way. But I also think we want to make sure that we realize that the medical world that we are all depending on so much is not looking at us as a system and looking at all of the interrelationships, and that's our job. We have to do that for ourselves.
I think that it's possible that a person who's been in a carcinogenic bath for a long time and that they could go out into the sun and then the next thing you know they have skin cancer, whereas if they did not go out into the sun, it's possible that they did not. And in which case the sun was the irritant, but it's kind of like, I wonder what would happen if they had been out into the sun, like they'd gone out into the sun for 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, and built it up. Could they then have a symbiotic relationship with the sun and not get cancer? On top of that, here's an idea. What if we took away the carcinogenic bath? And then they went out in the sun.
What a concept. I love it.
I would imagine that they would not get cancer. But we're blaming the sun instead of the carcinogenic bath. And I really kind of would rather that we focus on that. And this is part of what I'm shooting for is to try and get to a point where I've got land where people can go and at least, you know, have a smaller carcinogenic bath. I don't think anywhere we can eliminate it because, you know, we're just, pollution's just so out of control. But I do think that we can do things to try and minimize it. Can we have an environment where the carcinogenic bath is 100 times less or maybe even 1,000 times less? And then along the way, I think that once you take away this toxic bath, which includes carcinogens, it's possible that 40 other ailments will just disappear as well. So people, not just people with cancer. But this is my own crazy theory, and I'm sure I must be wrong, otherwise these places would be all over the place. Like there would be hundreds of thousands of places you could go where this is their big thing. We've taken all these steps to make a place that's, as you know, that's less toxic for those that may be suffering from over toxicity or something. All right, what else? Anything else you want to say about this topic, this cancer stuff? You've beat it. Relations. There was no knife. That's a good thing. Your hair did not fall out. Yay, team.
Actually, my hair is getting stronger with all the minerals and whatever else that I'm doing. It's getting stronger.
I want to pretend that I had played a big role in you getting better.
Please do that, Paul. Please pretend.
So you're not going to give me anything on this one?
I am. You have been, as so many of my friends have been, very good friends, and you were one of the better friends in that some of my friends were silent good friends, but they were scared for me. And you were never scared. You were always supportive of the alternatives that I was doing. There have been a few that have just been unbelievable. Johnny Gregory in North Carolina from day one. I just by accident happened to tell him about the time that I told, you know, the closest people in my life, and he said from day one, no problem, you can do this and this, and that is very helpful. The people that are not afraid for you, and I know it's hard not to be afraid, but man, when other folks are afraid, it just increases your own fear level. So what a concept if we could just help all of our brethren not be afraid of the sun and of insects and weeds for agriculture, and not be afraid of possibly plan B for example, for my alternative energy system. The plan B, if things, you know, don't work entirely, is that I'm in the dark for a while. I get to have the dark. So, you know, and not be afraid of not having 401ks and health insurance and all kinds of insurance about insurance. How, if we could help ourselves not be afraid, I think that the possibilities of moving towards another way of being on this earth are endless.
When I first put up my stuff about cancer that I'd heard about, and it's still for me a big mountain of anecdotal stuff, and I mean I've read tons of reports and research and things like that, and I've never had a bout with cancer, so it seems like you know, why the hell should I give a shit? But it's like but I do, and it's kind of weird. but when I first put up what I'd found, and I wrote a quick little summary, I got like 5 or 6 different hate mails, like, how dare you deceive people, how dare you mislead people. Somebody might, you know, time is of the essence, that they need to go in and get that surgery right away, and you're giving them false hope. And so eventually I got so many of them that I took it down, and I had it down for like a year. And then what happened was, is I got like 30 different people who emailed me and said, I heard you have this information and I have cancer and I need this information. And I would send it to them privately. And then finally I went and I thought, you know what, screw it. So I reposted it along with the thing of saying, if anybody feels that this is inappropriate, you need to fuck off. And so, no, it's up there. It's posted. I'm not taking it down. And I'm really sick of people telling me to, you know, that it's because the message is contrary. Now, in hindsight, I wonder if all those emails I got were corporate trolls. I wonder if they were, you know, some interns with the Cancer Society or the doctors of whatever, you know, who knows, the manufacturers of Cancer Gear Inc., you know, and my message could cut into their profits, and that's why they were sending me those nasty grams.
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that, again, all bodies are different, as are all ecosystems. And I think it's really important to be open. I think one of the gifts of this to me is not putting myself in the dogma of, you know, being an organic
advocate.
Thank you. I was trying to look for the right word on that. I mean, I remember blithely saying to people, you know, as I showed off my yoga body and my, you know, healthy skin tone, that my health insurance plan was to stay healthy or die, and then this happened. I think it's really important to be open, and if some people want to use the American medical system for particularly diagnosis, and because I think they're really good at diagnostics too, so diagnosis and trauma and it is the system that we have, so we either need to change it from within or get rid of it entirely and start over again. I think it is really key to be like Dr. Gutierrez in Tijuana, Mexico, at the Biomedical Center, and be very, very humble. I know that's your favorite thing.
I've heard about it. Yeah. I think I read a book once that mentioned it.
There you go.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my parting thought.
If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about all sorts of ideas about how to have a life with less cancer, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.